What do CEOs need to know about sales these days? A lot. Outdated sales strategies and tactics plague most companies today. Listen to what innovative CEOs and experts have to say about how to change all that with Sales Talk for CEOs. Welcome to Sales Talk for CEOs. Today, I have an entrepreneur with me who really cares about communication and especially in the medical industry. I mean, a lot of us out there as CEOs, we think we know our customers, right? But the truth is, a lot of times we really don't. But when it comes to medical, we really need to know our customers because we really have to get the right information to them. It can be a matter of life and death. And this is the passion behind Wesley Portugues and his company, Medcom. Welcome to the show, Wesley.
It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm so happy. I know you're in New York and it's a Friday and it's a little later in the day here, but thanks for being on the show. And just take a minute and tell us, what exactly does your company do for its customers? Who do you serve and how do you serve them?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for asking, Alice. So Medcom's Experts is what they call a medical communications agency. And we help pharmaceutical companies communicating their science and medical information and scientific data to mainly healthcare professionals, but also their patients.
Well, you have a bunch of really smart people who know a lot about their subject, right?
I try to hire people smarter than I am.
Yeah. And we're trying to help these companies with all these smart people who know how to talk about all this stuff to other smart people, but maybe they don't necessarily know how to communicate it to people who don't know as much as they do.
Yeah, you got it spot on. A typical clients that we work with, their title typically includes communications, right? So it might be like director of medical communications for a certain therapy area. Now, typically their education is in the science, and that's extremely important, of course, and the most important part of their job. Where we come in is to kind of merge and marry that science together with communication strategies.
And make sure it's communicated in a way that the audience can understand it, not super technical, right?
Yeah, I always jokingly say we bring it from ultra complex to just complex, okay? Because we are still communicating to healthcare professionals, of course. They're extremely smart individuals. But yeah, there's many different concepts we need to think about. For instance, a lot of the data that pharmaceutical companies have is a little bit dry, and we need to kind of help them, also putting some more emotional content in there so that we don't just educate the brain, but we also educate the heart, because ultimately healthcare professionals are people that work with patients, with human beings, right? So bringing it from that very kind of dry scientific level, we want to help providing context for the healthcare professionals to really understand, okay, this is the data, but why does this actually matter? And, right. When they understand that part, we know we did our job well.
Yeah, I think that's so important because these medical professionals are super busy. They have a lot to learn. There's always new information coming out, and these pharmaceutical companies want them to understand, right, this very complex information. So make it a little less complex and a little more interesting so they actually read it. And then they're better able to help all of us, their patients, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, the average physician is overburdened on so many different fronts. They need to see so many different patients. But also, I would say the government and the authorities, they've added so many administrative tasks, yes, to their load. There's a high rate of burnout, and even worse than that, suicide among healthcare professionals is a higher rate. And if you think about how academics typically communicate, it's true, scientific publications and long presentations and slide decks and these kind of things. And that is all great. And that's how we got where we are as a society when it comes to science. However, the modern way of consuming content is quite different, right? If you look at our personal lives, we're on TikTok, Snapchat, X, right? YouTube Shorts. Our attention span has dropped from 50 to about 8 seconds over the last few decades. And this is not unique to us, right? This is the same when you are a healthcare professional and you're at work. They have very little time. yet a lot of the communication methods so far used so far by pharma are not really compatible with that. So we're really trying to educate the market and come up with new solutions to be able to, you know, let's say give the cliff notes to doctors about the science.
I love that. Now, I'm really interested in your story and how you came to be so passionate about this. So let's rewind 13 years to when you started this. What were you doing right before you started? And how did you get the idea that, oh my gosh, this is a big need in the market that I can fill?
Yeah, I would say that Medcoms Experts was born out of frustration. And that sounds maybe a little bit negative, but I don't mean it like that. I was actually working on the other side, as I call it, which means I was on the medical industry side, and I was working with agencies like mine, right? And as a result, I don't know, I kind of felt they were kind of complacent and not that original. And that sounds very harsh, but I really experienced it that way. I worked in the medical industry from my early 20s. And then I did a little stint in automotive, like completely different.
Oh, right? My gosh. And that's a big change.
Yeah, I couldn't be more different. So in both cases, I was in marketing functions. But what I noticed when I stepped out of the medical industry into automotive for 3 years is I could be so creative and I could do so many mm-hmm. things, and it would actually cost way less as well. And, you know, like the world was my oyster. And then I actually came back to the medical industry, and yeah, then I saw the huge difference. Like, why can we not do these things while we're here? And why is everything so expensive? And still it's not actually better than what I did there, right? Now, a part of it you can explain because this is a very highly regulated industry. So of course, that adds cost, and it means you need to be very careful about every single word, right? We work in medicine, so that all makes sense. But, you know, to an extent, it also doesn't make sense because there were way more possibilities. And I just feel that, you know, the established agency roster that there was at the time, they just weren't living up to my expectations. They wouldn't really surprise me. And after some time, that frustrated me. And as a result, I thought, like, okay, you know, let's do this better and let's shake up this industry a little bit.
Yes, do it better and shake it up. And I love that you got a different perspective by stepping out of one industry into another. I think it makes a big difference when you can see it from another lens, right? Okay, so you were working for a company on the other side, as you say. Mm-hmm. And so how did you decide, I'm going to step out and do this and I'm going to offer this as a service because I truly believe I can do it better?
Well, like I just had these ideas and it was kind of a wild idea. And I had a co-founder at the time and, you know, we went out for a drink and suddenly had this idea. I was like, let's do it. And, you know, from there, the decision was made and we, you know, we made a one-page business plan, you know, read all of the self-help books you could find on starting a business. You know, I have had some businesses before that. So the entrepreneurial part wasn't really fully new to me. But like this this space definitely was new to me. And it's kind of interesting because when I started the company, a lot of people were kind of looking at me and saying, Wesley, is everything all right with you? You know, like you're not a scientist and now you're starting like a scientific communications agency. Is it? So yeah, I think that's kind of the point, you know, like I will hire the scientist and I'll always make sure that science will be accurate. But I think the reason that some of these other agencies are not as innovative and original as I would like to is maybe because of that. And I feel it's always what you can learn from other industries and other roles and so on, all the variety that you go through in your career is the part that makes you strong in so many of these different areas. So it's in my mind, relatively simple. You go somewhere else, see how it's done there, and then you see what's better there, and then you bring that back to your own industry.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so you and your co-founder decided over drinks, this would be a good idea to start a company. You have the entrepreneurial flame burning anyway from a few other ventures, and you're ready to go. How did you get your first customers?
Well, that's a great question, actually, because it's a fun story. We had very limited funds, right? We had like some savings and you know, there were no investors, no banks involved. It was just, you know, we basically went to the Apple store and bought two laptops and needed to figure it out from there. We had a little bit of money and we took kind of a gamble and we said, okay, if we want to break into this industry, we should be within the top three search results on Google, right? So I remember we invested what at the time for us was an enormous amount of budget into good copy for a website and good design for a website. And we built our website with the idea that, like, if you are somewhere highly ranked on the internet, you're automatically going to get some leads, right? And to an extent, that actually worked. So while we were doing that, we were also, of course, going to anyone that would listen to our story, you know, relevant or not. Like, we would just, for the heck of it, just keep repeating our story, you know, asking questions, gaining the feedback, exploring a lot of different ideas. And at a certain point, we got an email from Baxter, you know, that a lot of people may know is a pretty sizable company.
Yes.
And they had a new, in that case, a medical device used in surgery that they needed to launch and they needed help. So that was our first client and that became a major client for us. And from there, like the rest is history. We delivered really good work. Clients were really happy with us. So we got into another therapy area at Baxter. And from there, you know, so some people left the organization, went somewhere else, brought us in at the other organization. And yeah, the rest is history. This is now 13 years ago.
Well, once you have a name like Baxter, right, it does help.
Absolutely.
Because now you've got people, you mentioned you did a great job, also important, right? So you got a big name, you did a great job. So now you have people who will vouch for you, right? And who will recommend you and who will introduce you to other people at Baxter or outside of Baxter. And I love what you said, you know, people left Baxter and they went to another company and they called you. And isn't that fabulous, right? That's what we all want and need, and it really helps us grow faster. And as we know, the cold outreach is tough. Not that you shouldn't do it, but it's so much better when someone brings you in and can vouch for you and they're introducing you and bringing in the credibility and saying, these people really know what they're doing, hire them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess we all want inbound leads, right? Those are the best to have, because I'm always saying to my team, like, you know, I don't want our services to be sold. I want our services to be bought. And what I mean by that is if you're selling, you're kind of persuading, convincing. And I kind of don't want to do that. Like, I want to work with people that see the value in what we have and that think like, wow, this is a great opportunity. Let's work with these guys. Yeah. Because it's such a different dynamic in the collaboration. Also down the road, like, there's way more appreciation for each other and for us as their partner versus a vendor or agency, right? And that is ideally, of course, what we want. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't do any outreach or we don't do marketing or these kind of things, right? Like, it's still like you need to stand out, you need to show to the world what you have and what you're doing. But yeah, the principle is still true to us.
Well, we want to serve, right? That is really the best way to sell. If we serve, right? We serve their needs. We serve what they need. We do what's best for the customer versus, you know, just trying to sell stuff. And it really does work out in our favor. And it's just a change that every big sales organization needs to make these days. They need to stop selling and start serving, right? Serving, helping, solving problems, and not being so worried about selling and closing a deal. And I think it just works so much better. But all right. So in the beginning, you were selling. Was your partner also selling? The two of you were out there doing that together. And you got some big clients. And you're also running the company and delivering, right? Mm-hmm. And some of the work. At what point did you start to grow enough to say, okay, we need some help. And time to get some sales help or customer success help. What did you do first? And, you know, when did you decide to do that?
Well, actually, that took quite a while. Not that we weren't growing fast enough. We were growing really quick. Within the first, I would say, 8 years, we were already up to almost like 100 people. So it went really quick. But actually, within that continuum, it took a long time before we would hire any like people helping with sales. And in a way, I don't think we ever hired salespeople. However, we have, of course, hired people like account managers and strategists and so on that are ultimately selling our services too. It just doesn't like feel like sales, right?
And not I think a traditional sales setup is what you're saying, right? You're serving your customers, but maybe not in the traditional way where there's BDRs getting, you know, developing the business and then AEs closing the business and then AMs managing the business. You've done it a different way. So tell us about that, because I think it's really interesting.
Well, I think ultimately it's about like what you're passionate about. People, other people can see that, right? So I personally, you know, I'm so involved in this particular niche space that, you know, I give I speak a lot at conferences. I have a podcast show. People know me, right? So it's relatively easy for people to reach out to me or for me to reach out to them and have a conversation. And ultimately, if you figure out how to solve their problems best, then they want to work with you, right? Now, that's figuring out how to solve people's problems best is very tricky in our particular industry, because like I heard you use the term serving, right? And that's actually funny, because we have had a lot of conversations in our agency about that, because serving and I understand the context you mean it in, right? But in our industry, what was actually kind of a problem with most of the established agencies was that they were doing exactly what the client would ask for. And that was my frustration too, right? So that is one way to serve.
Yes, not necessarily the best way, but yes, because we do have to add value and insights, because our customers don't know everything. That's why they hire us. We're the experts.
Exactly. And hence the company name Metcom's Experts. So we really wanted to stand out from, you know, the more tactical, like, you say jump and we ask how high, right? Like we wanted to go to more like, okay, we want to understand what you want to achieve, and how we're going to get there is kind of secondary to that. Well, the standard in our industry is to talk about like, let's develop some content, right? Let's make an animation. Let's make a PowerPoint. And we often forget to talk about like, why are we actually doing this? And how do we know that's a success, right? So
what do the doctors we're trying to speak to actually need from us?
Absolutely. So that is really like a key piece of what we do. And that is why it doesn't really feel like selling, because we're kind of more creatively solving problems together. And we really, and when I say together, it means us and our client, we're trying to kind of take this distance a little bit away between an agency and a client, because often that just adds to the incompatibility of how you can solve their problem. So we're often very honest if we haven't done something before, or if something is maybe very ambitious, but you know we still believe it can be done. And that way it becomes more of like a partnership that you have together, and it's so much more fun to work like that. And that way you don't need to, you know, use this kind of very salesy approach where it's all about the dollars, and you know the clients kind of sense that.
Focused on closing the deal, right? We're not doing that. And I think the way that you're doing this is very collaborative, and you're an extension of their team versus a vendor, right?
Absolutely.
And so it feels, you know, like they can talk with you and collaborate with you. And I think that's absolutely the best way. So let's talk about how this looks in terms of finding a new client, understanding, you know, what they need and how you're going to help them, and then actually moving into doing the work. So it sounds like you, at least you, maybe your co-founder also, are still heavily involved in the sale and finding the new customers. Yeah.
No, actually we had a very clear distinction. So, and, you know, he left a few years ago, but, when we started, he was more on the operational side of things and I was more on the commercial side of things. So, so marketing and sales for that matter, was my responsibility. And when I would sell something, he would then take care of delivery.
Okay.
So we had, and I think that's super important, especially when you have a partnership. that you define clear roles and that you have some of your own territory where you're responsible for.
Yeah. And so, okay. So then when you did start bringing, you mentioned a strategist and some other people to help with a sale. So what does it look like now? Who's going out? I mean, it sounds like people know you because you're speaking, which is fantastic. You're out evangelizing. People can know you and they want to work with you. So how does that business come in through you and through the rest of your team?
Yeah. So basically, let's split this up by new sales. Let's call it like that for this podcast, right? And then we have existing sales or existing clients. So we have a what we call a client partnerships team. There are great, intelligent, amazing people in there that know a lot about medical communications, of course, and they work with an assigned account, right? So a customer that works in a certain pharmaceutical company and typically on a particular therapy or in a therapy area. And this will be assigned to one of our client partnerships managers. The client partnerships manager works like hand in hand with this particular customer. And, you know, this is almost exclusively a long-term collaboration. We typically work across the continuum of a drug launch, right? So about 3 years before the drug would actually be available to patients, we are already working with that company on this because they need to, you know, start educating the physicians already before it's time for a launch and before the FDA gives a nod and say, okay, you can go to market now. So so they typically work for several years before launch and then maybe 1 or 2 years after launch as well. And then typically the focus is going to shift to another product. So so they work together with them. And yeah, again, like they're not salespeople, but they do sell projects, right? But they do it through solving problems of our customers in an innovative way, an effective way, and partnering with them. So that is kind of the existing client part.
Yeah, they've built strong relationships. So they get into the conversations that let them know when new products are coming and new projects are going to be coming up. And they collaborate on those and make them happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, a big part of it is also being proactive, right? And again, that's kind of the fabric of our existence here at MedComms Experts, or I should probably make the pun and say it's in our DNA. It's really important because, like I told you earlier in this episode, our customers are often not trained on communications necessarily, but they're trained on science. And we come more from the communication side, even though we also, of course, have all the scientists on board and so on, right? But my point is that we can be very proactive with our customers and already know what is around the corner in terms of challenges for them. So it's very important that we are proactive, reach out to our customers and tell them about our ideas and potential ways to tackle future objectives. So the productivity is key.
Yeah, absolutely. That it's key in any business. It's just, it's ignored too much of the time, right? We have to be proactive to be good at sales. That's it. And if we're trying to serve people, right? Yeah, you got to be proactive. You don't wait for them to call you, right? It's like you're sitting in a restaurant and no server's coming around.
Yeah, it's a funny analogy, by the way. Right? And, but it would probably surprise you how many people are still doing that in this industry. And, you know, of course, to an extent,
it wouldn't surprise me, unfortunately.
Yeah, it is probably not unique to medical communications.
No,
but I am always surprised, but that's probably just because that's who I am. But the productivity is super important. And you know, like it's funny because in my past, when I had conversations about sales with people, then, you know, sometimes people, well, I sold this project. It's like, well, like, how did you sell it? Right. So, well, the client called, I needed XYZ, and then I made a quote, and then they signed it, right? It's like, well, I don't think you sold anything. You just took an order, right?
Yeah. And you took an order, yeah.
Yeah. And it was more to demonstrate like the importance of being proactive. And of course, you know, if clients have ideas that want to work with us, that's all great. Like, and of course, that's appreciated. But you know, it's more my point of like, we need to be proactive and really like shape what is going to happen in the future, be in the shoes of our clients understand what keeps them awake at night and come up with solutions for that. And yeah. that is what I consider selling, but I prefer to call it consulting.
Yeah, I think that's great. All right, let's walk through new. Let's say you do a presentation and someone comes up to you from a company, a communications person from a company, and you haven't worked with them before. How does that move through your company?
Yeah, so it's relatively simple. Because we are experts in what we do, we share this proactively with the rest of the world. So that could be me speaking at a conference or on my podcast, but it could also be one of my team members doing that same thing, either at a conference or at my podcast. But also we have on our website, there is a knowledge hub. And we post all kinds of educational information there for people that have an interest in medical communication. So if you are working in pharma and you have some kind of communications challenge and you Google for that, it's very likely you're going to end up on our website. And that's definitely something that is appreciated. We can see that in our metrics. And, you know, sometimes that means people reach out to us proactively. They might give us a call or submit a website form or something like that. Or they might already know one of us, right? And reach out and say like, hey, I'm having this and that coming up. Can we talk? That's one way, right? And then there's also people that frequent our Knowledge Hub and other media a lot. And, you know, over time, once in a while, we may reach out and ask them if they would like to have a conversation and to see if we can help with anything. And but it's really like that kind of proactive outreach. We purposefully keep that very low key, no pressure. I always give an out because, you know, I want people to want to work with us. So I typically tell them like, hey, if it's not a good fit, just tell me, it's all fine. You know, no offense taken here.
Exactly. Like, what is so hard for salespeople to do? It's like, hey, just like, totally understand if this is not a fit. Let me know either way. Like, it just should not be a big deal, right?
Yeah, it's like, you know, I get like sometimes, you know, everyone gets them, right? These sales calls, like spontaneously on your phone, someone who found your phone number. And it's like, you know, like because I'm an entrepreneur, I feel some level of compassion, right? And I'm trying to be polite and say like, well, you know, I'm not interested. And sometimes just go on. It's like, you're just wasting your time, you know, like, so obviously that's time to break up the connection there. But like, I think that's a good analogy to take here. Like you wouldn't want to spend your time with people that are truly not interested. And somehow some people seem to stubbornly think that they can change that, but
they can convince them or, you know, coerce them, convince them, manipulate them. I'm not really sure, right? But that's not selling, right? You find someone who has a need and you talk about it and see if it's a fit. And if there's no need, there's no need. Get off the phone and call somebody else.
Yeah. And it's like with any relationship, right? Once you need to force someone to be in a relationship with you, that's typically no good news.
Right. All right. So once you know, they called you or they've walked up to you at a conference or they've been on your website, but anyway, they say, we want to talk to you. And then is it usually you who handles all that inbound? Do you have a team, your strategist, perhaps talk to them? How does that work?
Yeah, it kind of depends. Like, of course, you know, we have been on the market quite some time, so we get quite a lot of these requests, which is absolutely a privilege. But it also means that you need to be a bit selective. So I have an amazing team. Anyone on my team can handle any request. But also, like, if there are certain things that I have personally like a huge interest in, I will always make sure that I am in that particular discussion. So we will have an initial discussion, and we're very thoughtful about how we engage with new potential clients, right? And one of the things, again, is to kind of check, is this a good fit? And not just for us, but also for them, right? So for instance, we're known to be innovative. We're known to challenge our clients. Some clients, they just wanted to get something done, right? It's like don't ask questions, just do it. Like, make the presentation, right? And we would not be a good fit. They would get so frustrated because that's not who we are. So we're just going to do our own thing and going to constantly like push to, you know, do things in a way that we think is best or that we, I guess, know is best, even though that sounds a little bit arrogant. But, you know, and we don't want anyone to be in that position. So we're very open and transparent in our initial conversations to understand like, hey, you know, like, how do you think about agency partnership? Are you looking for like a vendor, or are you looking for a partner, right? How important is it what you want to get done? Is this a priority for you, or is this kind of a nice to have? And, you know, really to help understand for both sides, like, is it a good plan that we're going to work together? Are there good grounds? If so, then we will follow up, of course, and then we'll start diving into really deeply understanding our client and our future client, and understand how we can help them either solving their issues or tackling, you know, some ambitious projects they have in mind.
Yeah. I love that. That's really much the way that I sell. Most of it is people that I already know, either coming back to me or introducing other people, and then being able to really listen to them and hear what is it that they want. Here's where they are. Where do they want to get to? What have they already tried? You know, what's important to them? All of those kinds of things, right? And then coming to a conclusion together, whether this is a good fit or not. And if it's not, that's okay. Maybe in the future, there'll be a fit. It's not right now. And we can move on from that very gracefully, right? Maintaining the relationship.
Absolutely.
And I just think that this is the way it should be for everyone. But I think too many sellers today just walk away from prospects in a way that will never make those prospects want to talk to them again. Why would you do that? Right. But it's because of volume. They just have to keep moving, and you're not in a volume game, which is wonderful. And you're really, again, there to serve them. And by serving in this respect, we mean helping them learn and know and grow by adding to what they might already think they want to do, right? Not just doing whatever they want. So I think that's really an excellent, excellent way to serve your customers.
Yeah, thank you. And you know, maybe to comment on you know, the not high volume nature of our business, there's like pros and cons to that. Right. So because sometimes I wish everyone could be my client, like when you have, I guess, a more non-niche kind of product or service. Right. Because it's nice that you have so many opportunities. In our business, there is like only kind of few people in the world that you can really work with. So even within a pharmaceutical company that are very big, only like a handful of people will work in these kind of positions that we would typically work with. So it is a sizable industry, and it's definitely the economic model works really well. It's a good place to be, but it's all about trust, and you work only with a few people, and you have only one reputation, right? So that those are the stakes in our kind of business. It's all about making sure you perform like always, all of the time, and you never, you know, leave anyone behind. You don't leave any projects without like making sure that the customer is happy, because that's a killer in this particular business. So interesting to see how, you know, different businesses have like different aspects to them, and this is one of ours that is pretty unique to us.
Yeah, well, I think that account management piece is so, so crucial for you, right? You've got to build those relationships and then maintain them over long periods of time. Because the new products come out when they come out, right? And you got to be there when that's happening. So I think that account management, so even though you don't have a traditional structure, but you've got existing customers that you keep them happy and keep expanding within those, right? They might introduce you to another department or do another project with you. And then you've got some inbound coming in where you're really carefully selecting each other to make sure it's a good fit, because you want to have a customer for life, not just a customer for now, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a great phrase, customers for life. And, you know, and that's a part we haven't really been talking about that much yet in this discussion here. But of course, like a lot of our clients also come from that word of mouth referrals, and people, you know, move quite a bit actually in the industry, especially in large pharmaceutical companies. There's a lot of reorganizations and other reasons why people leave. You know, and what you where you want to be is that you have such a good relationship and made such a good impression that if someone is deciding to leave and go somewhere else, that they happily welcome you in another organization. And that sounds relatively easy, but this is a very regulated industry. Mm-hmm. So that also means it's not easy to get a contract. It's not just making a quote and they sign it. You need to get what they call a master service agreement, and that can take like 6 months. So this is not a small thing. So it's really important that you, you know, always think about your reputation first and you know, treat your clients' projects like they're your own.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. Love that. And I do, I love that people leave and take you with them. It's so important. And I think every CEO out there should be thinking, wow, are people leaving the companies we're working with? And are we knowing that they left and staying in touch? Have we got a strong enough relationship with them that they would bring us in to the next? Because that's easy business. And like you said, even though you have a master services agreement and it takes time, but you've got their trust, so they're going to work through it with you. And that makes it easier, even though it still takes the same amount of time.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it takes a lot of effort from their side. And it's beautiful to see when you are in situations like that, where people say like, well, like, you know, not literally, but I would go to war for you, right, to get you in. And that means a lot, because it's not just about getting more business, but it's about seeing that you actually did a good job in the past, right? So it's very validating.
Yeah, you made an impact on that person and the project that they worked on, so much so that they want to do that again.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I love that. Oh my gosh. Well, such a great story and such an interesting niche, right? Like when you and I first talked, I was like, I didn't even know this was a thing, right? Like these pharmaceutical companies, yes, they have these new products and they have to communicate about them. I don't know what, I guess I just never even thought about it. But I figured, well, they probably had a marketing team or somebody who did that. But as you mentioned, they're scientists and they're not specialists in communication. They're specialists in knowing what that product is about and having an outside look for them to really take a look at what they're trying to accomplish and do it in a different way is, it's just remarkable, really. I mean, I was just so fascinated when I learned about what your company did, because just wasn't even something that had crossed my mind.
Yeah, that's true for a lot of people. But thank you, Alice. Like, that's really nice to hear.
Yeah, yeah. And you, and it sounds like, you know, it's such a beautiful company. I know you're growing and then expanding and acquiring, and I think that's great. And I'm excited to continue to watch your growth. And so just before we go off the show today, I have three questions for you, and then I want to let everybody know how they can find you.
Sure.
All right, the first question is, what's a book that you think every CEO should read?
I would say Shoe Dog by Phil Knight, Nike founder, right?
Yeah.
This was an instrumental book for me as a founder CEO. You know, running a company is not for the faint of hearted, right? Especially when you have, when you're ambitious, you want to grow it, you know, as quickly as you can, like, but sustainably. And especially, you know, at times where you're self-funded and fully private, it can be kind of nerve-wracking. And, you know, there was a particular time that I went through that was really hard, where, you know, we lost like a major client and we had to downsize and so on. Yeah. It was not a good time. And you need to be resilient, because there's no one else, you know, like above you, so to say, like who is holding your hand, right? And a lot of people are depending on you. Like I feel my employees and their families, they're all depending on this too. So I feel a high level of responsibility. So during that time, I actually happened to walk by a church and had this little cabinet where you can exchange books. And I saw this book called Shoe Dog. I was like, that's interesting. And it ended up being one of the best books I've ever read, because, you know, Phil Knight went through similar experiences. It was more related to like legal situations with the manufacturer at the time, and so on. But he describes beautifully how you get through that. And it really shows like the resilience, how resilience helps you as an entrepreneur and how important that part is. And that ultimately, if you keep going at it and you never let your head down, you will succeed. So it was an amazing book. It was the best read I've ever done.
Yeah, I think it was good timing on that too, right? It was the right message at the right time.
Yeah, I think it was supposed to be.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, what's a podcast you listen to that makes you think differently?
Actually, it's a Diary of a CEO by Steve Bartlett. I know like probably 10 million listeners or something, so it's not that original, but I just really like it. The quality is really, really good. He has really, really cool guests. And I guess actually, you know, one of the reasons that we are here together is because of his podcast, because it got me into podcasting, but it also got me into, like understanding how, you know, like for instance, like a personal brand becomes more and more important than a company brand. That was one of his guests actually talking about it. And I was like, oh, you know what? Like maybe I should be more open to some of those invitations to join podcasts.
Yes, absolutely. I think CEOs can do a lot for their company by building their own personal brand and doing like you do, speaking at, you know, different venues and events where your audience is there, being on podcasts, writing your thoughts on LinkedIn or wherever your audience is. I think those things help tremendously. So yeah, that is a good podcast. I have heard him interview some people that I have never heard of, and they were so interesting, and you just learn so much. They are long though. Those podcasts are long.
It's true. They are a little long, but they make up for it by having great quality.
Great content. All right, last question. What does every CEO need to know to win in this market?
Okay, this is going to sound cliche, but I think it's all about holding up high standards. And I'm sure that a lot of people are going to agree with me. When you look around, you know, not just in your own industry, your own company, just like regular life, I personally, and might sound like a little bit bitter, I don't mean it that way, but like there's a lot of mediocrity out there, right? Like I call like a business to whatever, do a repair on something, and they don't pick up the phone, or they mix your name up, or they make a mistake, or it happens like all the time, and it makes you frustrated, right? And that is also true for our own companies. And I think sometimes because it's your own, you can't really see it. It could be because the sheer size, and it's just hard to really oversee everything to that level of detail. And you don't want to be a micromanager and so on, right? And sometimes it's just hard to see that because you're maybe even used to it, right? Things have been that way, but they actually need to be different. But I think ultimately this is what people see and what impresses people when you hold really, really high and strong standards, and you can do that consistently. And if one of the two fails, I think it's just very hard to run any like organization that is going to be continuously thriving.
Yeah. I would agree. And I think high standards are so important. And I always talk about asking these questions of yourself and your team. It's like, what are we doing? Why are we doing it? And are we doing it the best way that we can?
Absolutely. And, you know, and of course, running a tight ship, as they say, is as a result very important. But at the same time, it's all about your people. Even when you're in a product business, I'm now in a service business, but I worked in several companies where it was all about the product. And they tended to forget there that it's actually the people, right? Even though the product was amazing, without good people and without appreciating your people and hiring the best of the best that you can find, you know, I don't think you're going to be successful either. And, you know, that's, I think, one of the biggest challenges as well in this era.
Yeah, absolutely. My goodness. Well, thanks for being on the show today. Where can people find you if they want to learn more about what you do?
Yeah, I think there's two places to go. One is LinkedIn. So look for Wesley Portuguese. Should be easy to find me. You know, if it's more about learning more about my company, go to our website, which is metcoms-experts.com.
Okay, great. And that'll be in the show notes as well. Thanks again for spending time with me today. I really appreciate it. Thanks for sharing your story and sharing your caring about your customers. I really, really appreciate that.
It was a pleasure to be here, Alice, and thank you for all the thoughtful questions. Thank you for, you know, sharing these insights with your audience as well. You know, I found it a really inspiring conversation today.
Thank you. If you enjoyed the show, please like and subscribe, and we'll see you next week.